Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Peter Maxwell Slattery Show. And today we cross all the way to the UK to Ellis Taylor. How you going, Ellis?
I'm going very well, Pete, mate. And yourself?
Yeah, good, mate. Good, mate.
Good on you.
Now, you cover a wide range of topics. You're an author, numerologist. You do tarot, meditation. You know, and you're an experiencer, so you cover a lot and bring a lot to the plate along with our symbology and working with numbers and that type of thing.
Uh-huh.
What sort of led to all of this going about the way you go about things today? Which is, I know it would be a long, long story, but we'll try to just do
it. I was going to say, it's a very, very long story, mate. I suppose I can say that I've had experiences all my life, and I've got memories going back to being a really tiny kid. So although I had all these experiences, and they continued all the way through my childhood, and a little bit of a low patch during my teenage years, I suppose, but I was up to all the sorts of things that young blokes get up to anyway, so I was a bit too busy for that. Although I did have some, it slowed down a little bit during that time. And then it ramped up again in my 20s, and I just have always had strange to this world experiences and connections and interactions. And what I was fortunate to experience was that when I was growing up, lots of my mates also had experiences, so I was never alone. We shared them. We had several things happen between us, you know, when we were together. And also we talked about them. It was just a normal part of life. For most people, it seems that they were very alone with their experiences and had a terrible time with it. But for me, taking all these things for granted was probably the way I was. But you know, that has its own downfalls in that you don't really kind of see what a magical and extraordinary life you're leading. Then it came. I went back to live in Australia because I'm Australian born. I always say I'm a seventh generation Australian with a Pommy accent, and but I was born in Bridgetown in southwest Australia, and from a pioneering family. In fact, my ancestors were from Scotland, Ireland, Cornwall, those sorts of places. But the Scottish branch moved to Australia, and they were the Forests, and they were quite well known explorers and statesmen. So. You know, I come from a family with quite a significant history and bloodline, which to a lot of people is of interest in these fields. Pictish ancestry. So we're going back to the magical warriors of the Picts, which are an extraordinary people. So whether I've kind of inherited some of those genetics to allow me to experience what I experience, you know, it could be part of it. But I'm not your negative RH negative or anything. I'm bog standard RH positive, which some people look at as well. I do travel quite a lot. I go backwards and forwards to Australia. I do love Australia. It's a fantastic place. But my own feelings about it are that it belongs to the Aboriginals, and I feel that everybody else is a boat person. That's my way of thinking.
No, well, you're spot on.
And I've spent a great deal of time with Aboriginals, and to me, they're remarkable people. I love them to bits, and I'm absolutely blown away by their abilities when they choose to show them in front of people. Yeah. Please excuse the phone ringing. Someone will answer that.
No, you're all right.
Yeah, I spent an extraordinary amount of time with them, and learned a great deal of their culture while I was with them. And I feel blessed to have, been shown that. And they're great friends and always will be. And yeah, Australia's a wonderful place. But having said that, my heart, my soul, and everything is here in the British Isles. And I feel very connected to the wildlife, the nature, and the history as well of these lands. I've got lots and lots of memories of other lives, going right back to a little kid thousands of years ago, of being here, and when I first landed in this dimension to, begin the journey that I'm still on at the moment. And yeah, it's an interesting life. But as I said, it was one that I took for granted, and just kind of lived with it and saw it as a normal part of life, and never had any problems with anybody saying, "Oh, you're a nutter," or anything like that. Because, as I said, my friends were going through the same things. And yeah, I mean, even lots of the adults we spoke to also, honored these things and saw all sorts of weird stuff happening, ghosts and spirits and strange things going on around them. And yeah, I lived in a place that was rife with haunted places, and just beautiful energetic woods and streams and valleys, etc. And yeah, it all helped to sort of get me along the road to where I am. And then I went back to live in Australia, and I ended up living out in the bush, and that's where I first became friends with my Noongar mates. And while I was there, my marriage split up. I was quite knocked sideways by it, and I went to see a friend, and a friend said, "Oh, there's a new counsellor just arrived from Victoria." Your neck of the woods, mate. Just arrived from Victoria, and why don't you go and see her? And I said, "Oh, I might do." Anyway, I left them and went to see some of my Noongar friends, and they brought it up as well. I said, "Oh, there's a new counsellor in town. You could go and have a word with her," because I wanted someone to talk to. And so I thought, well, looks like I must do, as two people are saying it one after the other. So off I went, and went down to the local hospital where she had an office, and went in, and I spoke to her, and she said to me, "Have you ever had Reiki?" And I said, "No, what's that?" This was back in, I don't know, I can't remember the year. It could have been 92, 94, something like that. 94, I think. And I said no, and she kind of explained what it was. She said, "Well, if you come round tonight," she said, I'm a Reiki practitioner, and I do some Reiki." I thought, yeah, okay, I'm always up for trying different things. And anyway, she happened to live next door to my mum. She'd moved into this house next door to my mum, so I went round there, and she had the massage table thing out, and all the lights and the candles and the music, and like really nice, and all the scents. I laid down, and immediately this just indescribably beautiful blue, just my whole vision was just full of this blue. And across in front of my eyes, and spoken at the same time, came the words, "Come to me, come to me." And it just blew me away, Pete. And from that moment on, it wasn't a conscious decision, but from that moment on, I started taking notice of the extraordinary, and I began to reacquaint myself and remember things from, previous lives, but also things that had happened during my life this time, and started seeing how wonderful they were, and how they were forming a picture, and how the life that I'd led up to then was not appropriate to who I really was. And I started meeting all sorts of people, mainly women, I have to say, who taught me things like, healing, tarot, numerology. Well, it introduced me to these things, or reintroduced me. All sorts of things, and remarkable women, and some of them just everyday customers, because I'm a painter and decorator, and they were just people I met when I went to paint their house. And they, you know, for instance, the lady who introduced me to numerology was one such lady. And I started reading. I'd come across numerology before in magazines or something, and I thought it was a load off, you know, it didn't really kind of appeal to me. But then when I read these books and I started really looking at it, I could see how real and how appropriate it was. But at the same time, I also felt that it wasn't the full story. And so from that day onwards, and up to today, and probably for every day in my life, I will use numerology. I it's just something that's become part of what I do. Everything that ever happens, I'll look at the numerology of it. People I meet, all sorts of things, I'll look at their numerology. It's just an instinctual thing now. And but during this time, during meditations and during daydreams, because I daydream ever such a lot, I'll get more information. And I've actually developed another system of things whereby I use different formulas, and I also use different means of calculating a numerology chart. And I've combined all this with the alphabet symbolism of the letters, their placements and all the rest of it. And I now call it numerosymbology. And it's really about how the patterns and the placements of things condition us to behave in certain ways, and also give us the talents, because they're actually programs. It's all programs. It's all stuff that is foisted upon us, really, from the moment we're born and the moment we accept a name. And every one of these letters and numbers were designed by the priests of old, and particularly the Latin alphabet by the Roman Catholic Church. And they're all mind programming devices, every single one of them. And unfortunately, we're kind of stuck with them, because even though the symbols in themselves are neutral, the intent behind them is not. It's about regulating.
Does it?
Sorry?
Does it carry, it brings a form of energy with the intent?
Oh, yeah.
Even though they're neutral, that's sort of what, once they've got intent, it's sort of exactly. That energy goes with it.
That's why it works for them. They want people to behave in those certain ways, and then they can be read, you see. So they know exactly what those sort of characters will be like. But it's more than that. It is to do with energy, and it is to do with the movement and motivation and all that kind of stuff in all its sort of characters. So we end up being our birth dates, the numbers in our birth dates, then, for instance, will give us our talents and our abilities, and also, to a certain extent, the major fate moments. Our names describe the energies that will come at us in life that we will learn from. It's all kind of like the law of attraction, that the energy you put out is the energy you'll receive. So if you're putting out a name and it's got a certain frequency, then that frequency will come at you and you will learn lessons from it. So, but a lot of people tend to sort of become their name, and that's not really them, you see. So, and in fact, none of the numerology describes who you are, really, because you're a spirit without a name, and you're here having a human experience. So you always need to bear in mind that that you are much more than your name or your birth date, etc., even though that does describe what the shape of your incarnation in this very regulated world is going to be and is. It doesn't matter how rebellious or whatever you are, how much you decide you're going to be an anarchist or whatever it is that you want to do, you'll still be governed by those numbers. And in fact, if you're a rebel or an anarchist, it will say so in your numbers. So they're different extremes. So, you know, I mean, most anarchists and rebels will be 4 and 5. So five wants freedom. It needs to communicate. It needs to express itself and all the rest of it. So it's out looking for freedom. But then again, you know, freedom is kind of a bit of an illusion anyway, because it depends on how you want to describe freedom or interpret. Freedom is, because one person's freedom can be another's limitation. So you have to, you know, be careful of where you're going with all that. But you can, as I say, you can see why people are like they are from their numbers, and there's all sorts of degrees of what those energy patterns are doing and how much you take on board. But it does all really, really help to understand this world if you learn about numero symbology. I can tell you that. It, as I said, it was designed by probably the most practiced mind control organization there ever has been, and that's the church and their predecessors. I mean, you come across all the time these people who say that our alphabets just evolved from Semitic alphabets and all that kind of thing, but you have a look at them and there's not a lot of similarities, to be honest. Might look a bit like them, but it's not, you know, they've been changed. And for instance, the small a letter, you know, look at that. That's the male genital area in profile. You know, that's the small letter A, and that's what they've used. They've used like the story of Genesis in a lot of ways to construct the alphabet, and it all runs through. And I wrote a book actually called The Esoteric Alphabet, and I put it up online for free. But the reason I put it up online for free was because I was absolutely worn out doing it. It was going to be part of my book, In These Signs Conquer, but it just got too much, and it needs editing. There's things that need changing, and there's a lot of additions I can make to it. But if you search around on the internet, you can find it. But I don't stand by some of it because my views have changed, but only a small part of it, because most of it is real and it is right.
That tends to happen. It's similar with my books, is it's something that I had wrote later on from other experiences or from other things that happen later on, the perspective changes, and usually it's to the better. It sort of opens up more. And it explains more and goes into detail more, where there's some people that I speak to and they think, I've got it down, I know what's going on. Like I always say, don't think that, because when you do, I say, I guarantee in the next couple of days, something's going to happen to put what you think out of whack, and it will usually be for the better. So I know exactly, mate, what you're saying with that, where, I could do that with a couple of my books already too, with the do extra editions, because it just, that seems to happen. It's pretty trippy how that happens.
Yeah, and that's wisdom, mate. That's how it happens, and that's exactly right. But yeah, it's been a very powerful guide for my my writings and my views and my perceptions of the shenanigans that go on in this world as well. So symbolism, although that was part of it, I mean, I really got into it because of my work in looking at occult crimes. There was a series of crimes that occurred in Western Australia in a suburb called Claremont, and they called it the Claremont serial killer. I've got grave doubts that it's one person, but they're calling it that. I was getting lots of psychic information, and it was telling me how, for instance, just on one occasion, there was one young girl who'd gone missing, and I was getting this information that she was in a well near rocks, And I was getting the kind of vague area of where it was, but nothing more specific than that.
Yep.
So, and I was in contact with the police, and I went to see the police commissioner, assistant commissioner, sorry, about two or three times, and had phone calls with them, etc. And the information I was giving them on these crimes, besides this little bit, was obviously valid, or they wouldn't have really wanted to sort of take any notice of me, but they were. And in fact, one of the policemen said on the TV actually sort of mentioned me, not by name, but by what I'd given them. But anyway, it turned out that this girl who'd gone missing, who I'd picked up, was in a well near Rocks. It turned out that she was in the area that I'd kind of pinpointed. Well, pinpointed. It was a bit a larger area than a pinpoint. Was in the suburb of Wellard, near Rockingham.
Oh, that's trippy.
And that's really when I thought, look out, you've got to start looking at symbolism a bit deeper here, because if you're going to be getting messages that are giving you symbolic messages as clear as that as well, that would have been quite easy to look at and find that area as well, if I'd have realised that. So after that, I really started to look into symbolism and combined it with my numerology, etc. So, yeah, I mean, we get inspired to go in different areas, different avenues by different means, don't we? And that was my means for going down the symbolism research route. And I've did lots of occult stuff and occult crimes and tried to sort of bring it to people's attention how these things, even if they're done by some single person, there is an absolute provable occult element to them all. They're darkness inspired, and I suspect very strongly that the darkness invisible, which some people call Satan, is responsible for creating psychopaths. Just takes away their ability to feel. Certainly possesses people, and it doesn't just possess, you know, people out in the community. It also possesses the people that rule this world, and or think they rule this world, and cause them to create the mayhem that they do.
It's funny you bring that up, because I lately listened to an interview. I can't remember the actual show, but there was a bloke, I think by the name of Dr. J, which is not really his name. He didn't want to use his real name because he's been in the psychology department for like 40 years in the States. And he said when he first got into it, he said nothing made sense of what he was taught at school in the terms of people with schizophrenia. Mainly with that, he was talking about bipolar and other things, but he said with schizophrenia, he was told, you know, people would go ballistic over this and that. And one example was that, and he did this after about 20 or 30 years, I think. It was over a long period of time when he started getting up in the establishment, working in mental hospitals and that type of thing. And he thought one day there was a bloke in there, and I think he said that this bloke said he was Jesus. So what he did was walk up to this bloke and said, "No, I'm Jesus." And what he was told was that this bloke should be going ballistic because, you know, he's meant to be Jesus. What happened was the bloke said, "We both can be Jesus." Now, yeah. What happened later on, he had weird experiences with a lot of people, and he kept on getting the same feedback, which was people would come in. Now, I think we can get by without medication, although with some things I think people do need it. I'm just on par with that type of thing, but I think naturally we could sort of get over everything if we recognised that the root source of whatever problem we have. But people kept on coming in that hadn't been taking their meds, and after heaps of people, they kept on saying, "We're told not to take our meds." And what he thought was that these people must be getting told this by something, because a normal mental health issue would, you know, bipolar, for example, you're down and then you're up, you know. But what this broke was the paradigm of, you know, it's in their head, because there was things pointing to these people actually having interactions with something. There was one bloke he was going on about that told him to sell drugs and go fishing in this spot. And the guy made a heap of money in 1 week and caught fish in this spot that nobody ever caught fish. People started fishing in that spot and nobody was catching fish but him. Long story short, he didn't sort of give it any naming, like whether like there was Archon board up or reptilian or the devil, those type of terminologies were used. But he's somebody that's been practicing for 40 years who was high up, and it sort of went into the same area with what you just said, that like with psychopaths, you know, these might, I think personally too, that they do point to other things happening that, you know, that they'll say it's one thing sort of as a cover up, because those high up that are doing the manipulation, you know, they know what's going on because they're part of it. Even if they're pawns, you know, like David Icke says, pawns in the game, they've got, some of them have got an idea, but once you go lower down, you sort, you know, you wouldn't have a clue actually what agenda you're promoting and, you know, implementing. So that's pretty full on. Now, in that, is it Amish? Is that how you pronounce that talk?
Amash. Yeah.
You brought up the royal family and missing kids around that area. Did you do a bit of writing on that in your any of your books? And what did you find in doing that type of thing?
I mentioned this in I think in some of my books, but also on my website. I get quite a few people write to me with their experiences of abuse, satanic ritual abuse, and have done for several years. Now, to somebody who has had no experience of esoteric things going on, the occult, the world outside the conventional world, then it probably sounds as if, you know, it's all illusion, nonsense, you know, made up stuff. But when you've actually seen how energy works through your own experiences, how things can actually just appear in front of you, how you can see scenes going on that are not going on in your dimension, but at the same time you can see them happening, but also see the room that you're in or whatever, you know, these sorts of things.
Exactly what you're saying. Yep.
You can see how these things, these rituals, these abuses can go on. They're perfectly possible. There is no argument against it being possible. But I have also got memories of my own abuse in situations like that in other lives. I've also, like I said, spoken to people who've had them happen to them. People who... The other thing as well with this stuff, mate, you get a real, quite well-refined sense of what's true and what isn't. You know if someone's feeding you a line. And it doesn't mean that you won't always... you know, fall for something, because, you know, you're not always on top form anyway. But generally, you can smell the truth. And when someone is telling you something, there's certain things that you intuitively pick up to tell you whether they're telling you the truth or not. Now, the people who I've met face to face have told me things. I have, with some of them, I have felt they're absolutely dead set, dead real, what they're saying, actually happened. And there's a couple of instances on my site. I mean, there's one lady who I interviewed who's on my website, who was satanically ritually abused in Perth. And that's to be read on my website. It's got password protection on it because I don't feel that this sort of stuff should be too easy for children to get hold of, because it's not nice stuff and can give them nightmares, and I'm not going to be part of assisting that. But then there's another lady who wrote recently who lives in Australia too, who also had similar things happen in similar situations by similar families in Perth at the same, well, actually a generation before. The locations actually pointed to one of the places it pointed to was St. Mary's Church, which is it's a very old church for Australia, for Western Australia, in a place called Swanley, and next door to it used to be an orphanage, and the energy there was just horrific. I went there and I wrote an article about it, and the reason I went there was actually I was directed through some geomantic work that I did to this church, and it was obvious to me that something was being targeted at the church and something horrible was going to happen. So what I did was contacted the vicar and went to speak to her and told her all about it. She was really good. She listened, and she told me about a guy who'd written the history of the church and come across a lot of stuff about abuse that had gone on in the orphanage and in tandem with the church several years ago. He'd come across it during writing this history, but unfortunately it died before his book came out and his research had gone missing very conveniently. Yeah. And I, like I said, I went there specifically to warn her, and she actually showed me this photograph when I was there of, they had this new community centre built next to the church, and she showed me this photograph that was taken during the construction by somebody, one of the parishioners, I think. And there was a tree, a large tree by it, and when she developed the photograph, there was a body of a man hanging from a tree, which was quite spooked her, you know. But I saw the photograph and it was quite, you know, very clear that's what it was. But she, I warned her. Whether she took it as you know, meaningful or not, I did sort of say, look, I really feel that there's something going on here. And sadly, some months later, a wall fell on this lady, and I'm not even aware whether she survived, but I know that she was at least a paraplegic. It's quite disturbing, but that was done through, you know, psychic stuff and the and also the, as I was saying, the geomancy that I was doing. It was pattern stuff that pointed me towards it, and I just felt I should warn her, but unfortunately it happened. But that's the sort of thing that goes on. I also get like psychic visions of things. I named this road during this Claremont investigation thing, which is still going on actually, and I've never sort of caught anybody for it. But I pinpointed a road that was significant in it, and sadly one of the girls who went missing was found, her body was found in this road. But things like that, and there's been several cases over here that I've given psychic information to, and that's also been verified as well. It's just something I used to do. I haven't done a lot of it lately because, you know, as old Niche said, the longer you stare into the abyss, the more the abyss stares into you, and you start to get very you know, it just feels creepy and you just need a break from it. It's too dark, you know. So I took a break from it, but I still get people asking me to look. But at the moment, I've been focusing on other things, and As I was saying before, I kind of spend my time doing lots and lots of writing, I'm writing a book. I'm writing a memoir for my mum, and I'm also writing my website. So it's very busy. I don't have enough time in the day, but I do get a lot of people writing to me, especially in recent times. I mean, it just seems to be increasing all the time as people going through real hardship with health and well-being and all that kind of stuff at the moment. And I do what I can, but I do feel as if I've kind of stretched myself to the limit, and at the moment not doing as well as I could have done. But I am doing my
Yeah,
best.
very energy draining. It's sort of just trying to focus and have a balance of what you do want to do. It's a pretty full on thing once it gets to a certain stage, and like you said, there's not enough hours in the day, so I can understand where you're coming from on that side of things. Now, it seems like intent, like, do you find with your experiences, whether it's psychic stuff or meditation or even interactions with whatever, do you find intent is sort of like, if you're thinking about it, focusing on it this stuff seems to happen?
No, it just happens anyway, mate. I don't often think about it, to be honest. It's not something that I've ever really, it's never been the focus of my life. I whether it's because I grew up with it, I don't know, but it's just stuff I think, well, that's pretty good. And if I remember to, I write it down. And if I don't, I unfortunately forget about it unless I've told somebody and they remind me. But it's not something that I really kind of aim to make happen or anything like that. Although occasionally I have done, and yeah, it does if I do. But I know it's there, and as far as I'm concerned, I just honor it, I just thank God or whatever that I'm able to see life from the perspective that I do. But mate, it gives you this broader perspective of possibilities, doesn't it? Nothing is impossible, and you don't have any sort of limits and borders to anything. And I just think it's just fascinating. What should we say? I see connections in things so easily as well from doing it. Everything is connected, and you really do see that. It's just a marvelous weave of experiences that anybody, if they get back to their spiritual authenticity, can actually experience. But it's getting back to that, and that takes work. For some people it's easier than others, but for some, the chains that are put on them through, as I was saying before, the names and birth dates, etc., it does make it harder to actually start walking in other worlds. But it's not impossible, and they can do it. I've kind of lived a life that's more right-brained anyway. I've never kind of fitted into this world's boxes. I was never very in primary school. I was okay, but in grammar school, I just it bored me to tears. I tried, but I spent most of my time playing truant or looking out the window and daydreaming and stuff. It was just wasn't for me, and the whole system isn't set up for people like you and I. It's set up for people who are left-brained. And I was doing like big adult jigsaws when I was four, and I could read it about the same time. I started walking when I was about 8 months old. I just was very capable, but the education system that we have now didn't give me anything that helped me to expand on that and do something that was, you know, going to really kind of help other people then.
Yeah, it's only to make kind of develop. It's only to make those certain few develop and you know, educate to, you know, what... Well, in a way, it's really just educating those who the agenda that they want to implement. So, but I know what you mean. It's sort of like you've got these abilities and you can and do things, whether it was like your, you know, artistic or whatever, but it's sort of limited the education system for those children that are like that to sort of evolve and sort of embrace their qualities. It's sort of like, no, you shouldn't be doing this. You should be doing this.
Yeah. It suppresses so much. I sometimes wonder, you know, where would humanity be now if it gave the opportunities for everybody to really explore their potentials, instead of limiting them into, you've got to learn those subjects in this way, in this order. Where would we be? It'd be fantastic, because, you know, our consciousness would just be phenomenal, wouldn't it? Yeah. It'd just be an amazing world now. But no, as you say, they've suppressed it intentionally, and it is to keep people in those little paradigms that they decide that human beings should be in. And but then, you know, I mean, having said that, I don't want to sound all doom and gloom. Having said that, we come out of the school system, and while we're in it, we're daydreaming and we're still walking in those worlds, and we come out of the system, and eventually, even if it doesn't happen immediately, eventually something triggers, like it did with me, like it did with you, and off you go. You know, you know you've been wound up and away you go, and you start really using and exploring things that other people are not exploring, or seeing how they fit together. And that information that you bring forward will encourage other people to come forward, you know, and explore their own avenues. And then, you know, it will happen that way. It will blossom in that way, you know, no matter how much they try and block people down. And there's some fantastic research and stuff around it at the moment, mate, that I am so enthused by. In recent weeks, I've come across people. I'll tell you a few examples. Only yesterday or today, I was pointed towards a guy called Dr. Ibrahim Karim. Now he does this thing called biogeometry, and he's discovered that by creating these symbols that fit with nature, they actually read and resonate then with nature, infinite nature. We're not talking about, you know, the tiny little 5 cents thing we can see. Infinite nature, and how that can heal absolutely anything. And he reckons that he's found evidence of that's how what they used in the in the Great Pyramid construction and stuff, and he is kind of saying that they were the ones who used it first. I dispute that, but it doesn't really matter who used it first. What does matter is that it works, and he's been working with the Egyptian government and the Swiss government to heal all sorts of things. Like, you name it, he can heal it with this system, and it's just fantastic. He doesn't claim to be the healer. He passes on his knowledge and what he's learned onto medical professionals who actually work with it and come up with the results, and stunning results. Ibrahim Karim, look for him on YouTube. Fantastic. I'll be linking to him on my website, actually, on the Buzz Extra, so you know you'll be able to get the links there. And then there's a guy called Isaac E. Mottison, I think. He does this thing called Edenics, and he's proposing there was a common literary ancestry to all of human language. Now, both of these guys I've mentioned so far, really, you know, they don't only confirm, they walk alongside and weave together with the work that I'm doing. And it's just so brilliant to hear all this stuff coming forward now. They're showing how language controls us, how symbols control us, how it's not actually the symbols that control us, it's the intent, as we said before, of their placement that is controlling us. But we can do the same. We can use symbols to actually make things better, to heal, to bring things into harmony. And then there's a guy who everybody almost has heard of these days. I mentioned him quite a few years ago, but he seems to be quite prominent now, and that's Masaru Emoto, with his crystalline water patterns. And now, just by thinking or just writing the name of something on a vase of water and then crystallizing it, it changes the energy of it completely. Lovely stuff, brilliant work. Again, fitting with this symbolic stuff. And then somebody else I read about the other day, not read about, what saw their videos, and they've got a website doing fantastic work. And that's John and Bonnie Mitchell. And they've got their video channel. I think it's Awakening Video, something like that. And they call it Mnemonics and Mind Control. And they're showing how there's all this subliminal shapes and patterns and swirls and things that are coming on TV that you know, some of it is subliminal in as much as it's very quick and only our unconscious minds see it. Some of it is like really full on blatant and directing us straight away to the alphabet letters. And it's showing how that's really kind of making people think in ways that they want them to think, how the darkness wants us to think. And if you can cause someone to think certain ways, you've got a very good chance of making them act in certain ways. So just brilliant research that I've just come across recently that I felt I'd like to mention. But yeah, it's a big one, this mind control at the moment, because that is very, very potent in the way that it is suppressing humanity and stopping them from actually achieving this just massive potential that everybody has.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, that's where it is.
While you've brought up that, one thing I would like to bring up is a movie. I don't know if you've seen it. It's a movie that just came out called Grounded. Have you heard of that?
Remind me, I do remember the name, but
I think Rodwell sent me the link to it, and it's very fascinating. I can't remember the actual bloke that made it or who's one of the main players in it, but I think what happened was he woke up one day, turned on the TV, and they were talking about how the earth can heal you just by being on it barefoot. So he got sore and went underneath his house, I think in Alaska or Canada, something like that, and got naked and actually got in the earth underneath the house on the dirt. And scientists have been backing up the findings in it. And what got me and was bloody amazing was at the end of the movie, they showed a person, I think you'd call a paraplegic, somebody who couldn't walk. And after 2 years of doing that, he actually got up and started using a frame to walk at the end of the movie. And they were showing how people with rotator cuffs, how they weren't sore anymore, people with sore backs, all these types of things. And like you were saying, I myself have got a few Aboriginal friends, and I love talking about the dream time and that with the old elders and that when I was younger. But something that always stuck with me was how they always said to walk barefoot on the earth, because it's connecting with earth and the energy and healing they spoke about. And watching this movie and how they went through it scientifically, you just couldn't deny what they were going through and showing scientifically. They had one skeptic on there, but from what he was saying, you could tell he hadn't looked at the data. And something just so natural, walking barefoot on the earth. I think even on the concrete, you can do it. I think if you've got something like carpet or something synthetic, it will block that energy. But, yeah, just walking barefoot on the concrete or the earth. Yeah, I've actually got a link on my blog to that in a few articles with the scientific findings and other things. Mm. But I think it was well worth mentioning just because it's just so simple.
Yeah, that's a really good one. It kind of works in tandem, though, as well, with what you believe, and if you act upon it, it'll work. You know,
yes.
It works along those lines as well. But that's okay. That's good. There's definitely a benefit of walking around barefoot on the earth, without a doubt. Yeah, I would definitely subscribe to that one.
Connects you back to nature,
doesn't it? Just yeah. And that's very important, and that's another thing that Abraham was talking about, you know, this real necessity for people to connect back with nature. And yeah, watch the videos, man, and I recommend them highly to everybody on who listens to this. Just watch him. Just such a lovely guy. I mean, he's like a, to me, he's like an Egyptian Merlin. He's just such a nice guy. And lovely sense of humor, very natural, very warm, and brilliant information. And he doesn't only say this happened, that happened, blah de blah. He shows the evidence for it, and yeah, that's just fantastic. Getting back, actually, Pete. Sorry, I meant to mention when you mentioned the royal family and stuff. I did some work on. Well, I do a lot of dowsing and stuff as well, energy work, and I've done that for donkeys. But I also do map dowsing, and I'm very interested in the way energy works. And I actually got it in my head one day that I'd just have a look at on the map of Great Britain and mark out where serious crimes, etc., had occurred, serious crimes against people, like murdered people and stuff, and the ley lines and the sacred sites, etc. And yeah, I mean, it's on my website. If you look on lsctaylor.com, BM alignments, I think it's called. But anyway, the you can see this pattern emerge of direct straight lines going through sacred sites like Stonehenge, Avebury, all those sorts of things, and through manor houses, and through royal palaces, and you know, direct straight lines of significant, a lot of them significant, well publicised murders, etc. There's something in that, you know.
I mean, yeah, that's, I didn't know that.
What
that's,
is that saying, you know?
Yeah.
It's significant. But that's up on there, and what it does say on one level is that they're using the lines of energy, you know, whatever you want to call them. You can be sort of pedantic and call these things by loads of different names, but to me, a ley line is a straight line that joins up points on a dragon line, or whatever you want to call it, song line, anything you want to call it, because a dragon line or serpent line or whatever you want to call it weaves. But then on certain points on that weave, you'll get a temple or a church or a dolmen or something built on them, and then that you join those up, and that becomes a ley line. So that's what ley lines are.
No, that's weird. I knew about it with like Stonehenge and you know, some ancient places, but so it goes through temples and places the royal family have.
Yeah. But not only that, it goes through military bases, it will go through mental hospitals, and it goes through hospitals. Yeah, they use it all the time, man. Once you start looking at the occult side of things, it just becomes so blatant, you know.
That opens up a lot of things, just that fact alone, like.
Yeah. So what they do, you see, if they can hold an empowering ritual, and they always do it on significant dates as well, by the way.
Yeah.
They hold a powerful ritual on that particular site. And that actually can create a branch line off then, right? So you can have another branch line that comes off the energy line and goes to another place. But not only that, if it's a negative ritual, it can actually really corrupt the energy fields that are along that line. So it can cause something of significance to happen somewhere along the matrix, you see.
Yep.
So one of the things that happened was that the New Year's Eve between 2000 and 2001 then, yeah?
Yeah.
I went to this, it's the Sacred Hill of Perth. It's called King's Park. It overlooks Perth. And it overlooks this big basin that's in the Swan River. And this Swan River is where the Noongars say that the Wagul came down, which is their serpent. The Wagul came down and coiled up in the river there. So it's a vortex, yeah? Okay, that's what they're saying. It's a vortex.
Yeah.
And a major one. So what the darkness and its cohorts have done is built all these significant places around it. You know, they've got this sacred hill overlooking it, so they've built all their war memorials and everything over that. And they have, like, every now and again there's a murder committed there just to sort of darken it. And on the other, you know, just across the water then, is the what used to be the Freemasons' Lodge. There's a thing called Jacob's Ladder. There's a Black Pyramid. There's all sorts of stuff anyway. And what they did on this particular New Year's Eve was they had a big firework display, as they do in Australia, don't they, on New Year's Eve?
But yeah.
They built this thing and they decided they were going to set off fireworks and lights and all that all down the Swan River. And where I was actually sitting on this hill, I could see the bell tower directly, and then behind that, a race course called Gloucester Park, and Gloucester Park had its own firework display. So it came midnight, and just before midnight, the actual bell tower, which is symbolically, I've written articles about this as well, called Hell's Bells, symbolically the penis of Osiris, okay? So just before midnight, this bell tower started pulsating with all these colours. Vroom, 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 right? And the music's going and it's pulsating. And then bang on midnight, behind it, you saw all these fireworks go spurt into the sky, right? This is just a massive ritual. And I wrote about it the next day on my website. And this guy wrote to me and he said, you know, he's just sort of mentioning about, you know, wow, you know, what's going on there, et cetera. And he said, does this mean that in 9 months' time, something's going to happen of significance?
Trippy.
You know what happened 9 months later, don't
you? Yeah, 9/11.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was saying, trippy, like, yeah, I know where you're going. That is trippy, man. Jeez.
And there you go. On a major vortex, 9 months before. And they're all connected. I mean, all these lies and energy lines are all connected all around the earth. And the other thing was as well that Howard, you know, what's his name? The Prime Minister.
John Howard.
Somewhere.
Yeah.
John Howard. He was in New York the day before.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, yep.
And he was given a bell. So
the
when
only
you look
you
at
would pick that, like the way you pick stuff up, like yeah, like I know what it's like myself picking stuff up, but geez, I wouldn't pick that up. And you'll pick that's amazing.
Yeah. He's given a bell. I mean, if that ain't resonance and that ain't putting things together, he's given a bell and a bell tower pumps and boom, there you go, you know, have that, you know, and the Twin Towers, you know, and Building 7 that still a lot of people don't know about. But yeah, giant, humongous ritual. But we can go even further back than that, Pete. Am I okay doing this?
Yeah, go on, mate. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Go back to 2000, the millennium. I nearly said it right. Millennium Olympics in Sydney. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
At home bush, by the way.
Home bush. Yeah.
Just a little bit before he was elected.
Oh, jeez. I'm connecting it up, man. Keep going.
Now, the Harbour Bridge, which is either a rising or a setting sun, however you want to look at it.
Yep. Yeah, I'm connecting that too. Yeah.
Right next to it, you got Luna Park, the moon.
Yep.
Right? Excuse me. You got all sorts of other symbolism there as well, obviously. But anyway, so therefore, around the world, Sydney is one of those places that has shown their celebrations for New Year's. The New Year is shown around the world, yeah? It's one of the first places it happens, yeah?
Yeah.
The New Year comes in according to the Greenwich calendar. Which is, again, another install advice. I could go on for hours, mate. Sorry, but
right.
I'll keep to the subject. I'll keep to the subject. Yeah, so they hold the Olympics, yeah, on September the 15th in 2000, which is they hold the ceremony. And that's Prince Harry's birthday, by the way. But anyway, they have this ceremony going on. And I'm watching this on the TV, right? And they're going around with the torch, and then Kathy Freeman gets hold of the torch, and up she goes up the steps, and then they show this shot from the very bottom of the steps, right? And you know what it's like when you look at a set of stairs going upwards. When you do it from right at the bottom, it looks exactly like a pyramid, yeah?
Yeah.
So it's a stepped pyramid, right? And there's this girl running up there with this lighted torch up to the pyramid, right? And she gets to the top, and she stands there with the torch in this pool of water, and then all of a sudden this ring of flame, she lights this thing, and it's this ring of flame, and it comes up and engulfs her. At the top of a stepped pyramid, yeah?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. Same with even the torch. I know where you're going.
This is a sacrifice. This is a sacrifice. It's symbolic, but it's a sacrifice. She's been sacrificed on top of a pyramid.
You think about all the energy there too with people, like the amount of people that are watching that and that are participating in that. There's a lot of energy going into it.
Yeah, massive, massive.
Don't even have a clue.
And her name... I mean, she was chosen for her name, right? Her name, Kathy. For a start, Kathy is Catherine, which is a Catherine wheel, which is a symbol of St. Catherine, who was burnt on a fiery wheel, right? So that's sacrifice again. So, but free man, that was the sacrifice of free man. That was the end of freedoms. And so it appeared. And that's exactly what happened after that. Freedoms have fallen like ninepins since then.
Yeah, that's amazing, man. Like, that's trippy stuff, how you've picked all that up. Just the amount of symbology in that being a ritual.
Yeah. Yeah. Hugely. Hugely.
You can just once it's pointed out, it's just there. Like, I know what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's the sort of stuff I look at and I've been looking at for a long time. It just comes, you know. It's just this ability I have for seeing patterns, I think.
You see this in a lot of things, but like it'd be something you wouldn't even try to do. It would just, you would just do it. You'd pick up on the symbology. The numerology aspects, it's
it just happens, mate.
Yeah,
and then you get all this stuff, and then you kind of, then I write about it, and obviously when you write about it, you then you have to look up things to kind of support what you're saying that's out in the public domain. So that's what I do with my articles in my books. Yeah,
it's no, that's absolutely fascinating. Now, the activity where, like, whereabouts in England are you again? Are you anywhere near Anne that you've mentioned a few times in your talks and that Anne's place where you said that's sort of like a vortex there and that there seems to be sort of a lot of weird happenings around there? Are you situated near that area at all?
No, I'm not. I live in Wales. I live in a county called Pembrokeshire, which is the right at the very southwest of Wales. Absolutely cram packed with sacred sites. I mean, there's dolmens and rings and all sorts of stuff. I mean, it's a real treasure trove there of very ancient Britons, and more so than you'll see anywhere else, I think, in Britain and maybe even the world. It's just loads of it, and not only that, it's a really, really beautiful county. There's the coastline is stunning. The wildlife and the nature, the mountains, the streams, the rivers, just beautiful place. As you can imagine, tons and tons of portals and all that kind of stuff there as well. But yeah, nowhere near Anne's, but I do go and visit her occasionally, and yeah, usually I'll have experiences there. But funnily enough, I was up there recently and I spent 2 weeks there, and from memory, which my memory isn't the best, but from memory, I think only one thing occurred. But then that was for a reason. It was purposely made that way. So nothing occurred that time. But yeah, it's a very, I mean, it's not only because Jason's who he is, and the other thing is everything, and I mean everything that he says is dead set gen. I've had experiences with him myself, and he's, I've never met anybody like him. Nobody ever. He's just, yeah, just so wise. So wise. What's really strange is this contradiction between a bit of a Jack the Lad and on the other hand, this really wise being. And it's quite remarkable to watch how it can just change as quickly as that. But yeah, it's the house is very active. Lots and lots of things go on there, and I've experienced them. So many other people have experienced them. How Anne stays there on her own, I don't know, because I don't think I'd have the guts. it's certainly some of the stuff can be nice. Lots of it is very frightening. You never know what's going to happen or when it's going to happen. There's lots and lots of MyLab stuff, I'm sure.
Yeah, I've interacted. I've had some of that this way as well. So,
well, I don't doubt
it. Hand in hand sometimes, it's just. Yeah.
I don't doubt it. It's their job.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Not said and done, it's their job. Whether you agree with it or not, you know, that's another thing. But even the ones that maybe have a benign attitude to what they're doing, it is their job to sort of keep an eye on what can be a potential hazard to this world and people, you know. Not that I'm saying there's a lot of them, because I'm not sure there is, but I'd say most of them are pretty dark, but I would say there's probably some what they call white hats amongst them.
Yeah, twofold sort of thing.
Yeah.
But your area, the of the world that you're in, it just, not only has it got so much history, you've got so much range of just everything from bloody paranormal activity to UFO sightings to encounters to just like the nature spirit orbs and all that type. And even you've got, you know, some pretty trippy photos of even when people take photos of you, and you've got weird stuff that happens, man, and yeah. You know, all that type of stuff. I think, you know, with people like yourself and me, we, you know, that tends to happen a little bit more, but just that neck of the woods too, on Earth, so much goes on in that area. Like, it goes on everywhere, but just for some reason, it's sort of like, you know, such, well, sort of a small area compared to a lot of places, but it's just very contained, and sort of, it's like anything tripped out can happen. Anything paranormal can happen in that neck of the woods.
Britain is a very magical set of islands. Absolutely no doubt about that. It's very magical. It's unfortunately very, what should we say? It's very kept down. The energy of it, if the energy of these people awakened, I think that would be the end of them, and I think they know it. There's just a huge concentration of people with amazing potential in spiritual matters, for want of a better term. But that's why they expend so much energy, money, and everything to keep everybody locked into very limiting daily lives. But you know, it is very concentrated, the spiritual potential of this place, and the land's awakening. I mean, it's been very suppressed probably since the Roman times, I would say. Probably before that, but since the Roman times especially, it really ramped up. I mean, they were here, you know, 2,000 years ago, and spent their time building ruins everywhere, but they left their mark here, and I think that's when the real sort of bad things started to happen. But what happened was that the Britons were gradually pushed westward and northward, those who weren't killed, and then along came the other invaders. There was like the Angles and the Jutes and all the rest of it, and the Vikings and the Normans, and just a gradual genocide of people that were so like the Aboriginals, like every indigenous population, so attuned to the land, you know. And the people that came before the conquest, when they just came as people who just happened upon the Isles or whatever, when they came, they'd come from places that were attuned to the land themselves, so they brought that attitude with them and fitted in very well. It's only when the violence came that the country became enshrouded with this darkness, unfortunately. But it hasn't been killed off. It's still there, and there's a lot of people with a lot of potential, and what I attempt to do, and not just me, many, many others are attempting to do, is to wake people up to what they are able to do, and what the reality of, you know, the powers that they're genetically predisposed to, and perfectly aware, like, as I said, the Aboriginals are, that once awakened, nothing can stop them. You know, yeah. it's an amazing power, and the darkness will just go. It'll be gone, and it'll have to go into its place. the light will rain again. So that's really what people are doing, and possibly more like to bring back balance rather than any kind of dominance by anything.
Level things back out. Well, I think we'll wrap it up there, mate, but thank you very much for being on the show. And what I'll do is where people download this, I'll have links to the websites you have and to your YouTube channel as well. And very fascinating stuff, very fascinating stuff. So thank you very much for being on the show, mate.
You're very welcome, mate, and thank you very much for asking me. And can I just say a big thank you to everybody who's subscribed to my websites, everybody who's helped me in every other way, and to everybody who visits my websites and reads my books. I very much appreciate it. And thank you very much, Peter, for having me on.
No worries, mate. Hope to do it again sometime.
Yeah, that would be great. There's lots to talk about, mate.
Yeah. No, there is. We could go on and on. Cheers for doing this, and we'll talk certainly again soon, mate.
All the very best, Pete.
All right. Bye-bye.
Cheers, then.